I now welcome Rabbi Moshe Silberhaft on the line, familiar to many of us as the rabbi who was once called the traveling rabbi, and he's dedicated decades to serving far-flung Jewish communities across southern Africa. And one of the most remarkable communities he has worked with is in Zimbabwe, where he was last week. This was once a thriving center of Jewish life with synagogues, schools, and bustling communal institutions. Today, however, the Jewish population is a fraction of what it once was, but the history, memories, and traditions remain deeply alive, thanks in part to Rabbi Silberhaft's commitment to recording oral histories, preserving cemeteries, and connecting remaining members to a wider Jewish network. Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us on the line. Can you paint a picture of what Jewish life in Zimbabwe looks like today, 2025?
Paula, welcome back. Thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. Zimbabwe at its peak had 7,000 Jews in the entire country. As you said in your introduction, they had very, very strong communities. There were a large number of small communities in Kwekwe, Gweru, Kadoma, Penalonga, etc. Today, there are approximately 250 Jews left in the entire country. The two centers are Harare and Bulawayo. They both boast very dedicated communities, still have minyanim over Shabbat, and Chagim, etc. during the week is obviously more difficult. But it's very much the remnants, as you said, are very, very once vibrant Jewish communities.
What were some of the key factors that led to the growth of the Jewish community in Zimbabwe, and where did those original Jews come from?
So there were two sources. One was the British Jews that came. They came from Britain, a lot of English Jews, and then there were obviously the Sephardi Jews that came from Rhode Island. Those were the two main sources. There were some from Lithuania that came to South Africa. They weren't allowed to stay in South Africa at the time, so they had to travel north. Many came to Beira, and they stayed in Beira for a short time, and then they had to move north. That's where Jews arrived and had to go through to Tanganyika, which is Tanzania, and then they eventually landed up in northern Rhodesia, southern Rhodesia, which was Zambia and Zimbabwe.
Why weren't they allowed to stay at the time?
The Eastern Europe, Europe and the language, Yiddish, etc., in 1899, they weren't not categorized, they weren't recognized, should I say, to be allowed to stay in South Africa at the time. It's a whole historical history that goes at the time. At one stage, there were even 500 Jews that were sent out of South Africa. They weren't allowed to stay here.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
In the Union, yeah. And we can do a whole show on that one day.
Okay, I've made a note of that.
And it was called Lorenzo Marx in those days. And they were sent out, and then that's how many Jews arrived in those centers up north. They had to leave South Africa.
Rabbi, what later caused the decline of the Jewish community in Zimbabwe?
So the decline was caused, as we know, the minute there's uncertainty, Jews move. Because nobody's going to come to our aid, to our assistance. And just like in South Africa, the minute there was apartheid and the minute there was unsettling and rumblings, Jews started to move. So from South Africa, we know that we had 130 or 125, we're not sure how many exactly Jews we had at our peak. Today we know we're less than a third of that. And just like that, same thing in Africa. Mm. And in Zimbabwe as well. Mugabe came in and he was threatening, and he was actually taking farms, and people saw the uncertainty, and so people moved. And it's exactly the same thing that's happening here in South Africa. People are moving because of the uncertainty.
Do you think
the same scenario?
Do you think there will be a time that there just won't be a community in Zimbabwe?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. The day will come that you'll have none of the original Jews that were there. You'll have Israelis that flit in and out. You'll have investors, people coming in and out. But eventually there'll be no Jews none of the original Jews. But if you look in South Africa, you have a very similar scenario.
Mm.
Besides Glen Hazel and Sea Point and Sandton, Berea, Oxford, Emerentia don't have any Jews left. You look at that whole city of Johannesburg, used to be all Jewish. The whole Carlton Center used to be Jewish. Everything used to be Jewish. Today, there's not a single Jew in the area.
It's a foreshadow of what we see in Zimbabwe of what's going to happen here. I think both politically and vis-a-vis the Jewish community, as you're saying.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have to just brace ourselves, and we have to be positive about the situation. And we have to invest in our current community, what we have here. And it mustn't be seen as a negative. That's something that's so important your listeners must understand. It's just how Africa works, and we mustn't see it as a negative. What's most important is whenever there's change, Jews move.
Mm.
Whenever there's uncertainty, that's the nature of a Jew.
The traveling Jew.
It's the uncertainty, because nobody knows. Nobody's going to come to our assistance. In our history, nobody's come and said, oh, shame, you know. There's uncertainty. We'll help the Jews with schools. We'll help them with whatever they require. Nobody's ever done that. And so the minute there's uncertainty, they've had to move. So it's not a negative. It's just a reality.
How have you gone about documenting the heritage of Zimbabwe's Jews through cemeteries, synagogues, archives, and even oral histories?
So what we've done, not only in Zimbabwe, but throughout South Africa and the small communities, etc., is, first of all, archives are essential to save, to document. So we work very closely with the Kaplan Center in Cape Town, all the minute books, all the marriage registers. And also, where we could, we interviewed people. Dave Bloom runs a very successful website called Zimbabwe Jewry, ZJC.com, where he interviews people, gets pictures, stories. And Zimbabwe, interestingly enough, had a very warm Jewish community. Not that South Africa didn't, but because of its size and the nature of the people, they were very, very well, very connected. And so they used to enjoy sitting and chatting and telling stories and recording. So they were much easier to get together and record their history. Cemeteries, obviously, it's just to record the pictures and to make sure that they're maintained. And the Zimbabwe people are much easier to deal with regards maintaining of cemeteries and upgrading cemeteries. And we have in one town, Kadoma, for example, where the Muslim community maintain the cemetery for us.
That's
so we have
amazing.
A wonderful, because they're neighbors to us. They saw what we're doing and they said, you know what, let's work together.
So there's no threat on the cemeteries in the coming years. Like, those will be maintained and looked after.
Absolutely, 100%. We mustn't forget something, that the African people respect the dead.
Mm.
African people don't desecrate graves. It's a very, very important thing that people must remember. African people respect the dead. They don't desecrate graves. It's other people that desecrate graves.
Rabbi, what were some of the, what were perhaps one or two stories that stand out for you from your travels to Zimbabwe?
Well, on this visit, for example, the one was, we run, so the Bulawayo and Harare communities both established schools in the 1960s. One is called Sharon School and one is called Carmel School. They were both fully Jewish schools, and today they still run as schools, but they now, none of the Harare have two Jewish children in it. Bulawayo have no Jewish children in it. And they run on the ethos, the Jewish ethos, and in both towns they're the second most popular schools. Excuse me. And they run on the Jewish ethos, and people put their names down years in advance to get in, because they are run with the Jewish discipline, the Jewish ethos. And people enjoy that discipline, that principle.
Mm.
And we have no anti-Semitism in the school. We have Muslim children there. We do Pesach with the kids. We do Shabbat. Kids wear kippot. The boys wear kippot on a Friday. They do Kiddush. They sing Atikva, and they love it. The Israeli flag flies high in both schools, and there's no problem whatsoever, because they respect, and they taught the importance of it, and it's not political.
How connected are Zimbabwean Jews today to the broader Southern African and global Jewish world?
Very, very well connected. We have the African Jewish Congress, which ministers to which represents nine African Jewish countries around Southern Africa. And we're in regular contact with our people, and we liaise with them regularly. And obviously with internet and everything today, people are very well connected, and everybody knows what's happening in Israel and around the world. And the world is small, you know, with today with the internet and what do they call it, the algorithm, whatever. Everybody knows what's going on. Global world. And everybody's connected, and it's wonderful.
If I can just go back to a point you raised earlier, what lesson or lessons do you think the story of the Jews of Zimbabwe holds for Jewish communities around the world, especially those like South Africa that are in declining numbers?
Don't kick the stable door when you leave. Zimbabwe Jewry, when they left, invested in the community before they left. They're still interested. They're still involved. Even though they live around the world, they're still interested in their family ancestors. They're still interested in the schools, and they invest in projects. We run a project in Bulawayo called Sagofiti, where we look after over 500 children that their parents have passed away or they've been abandoned. And there's actually on Facebook a picture of me holding a little girl that 19 years ago we adopted her.
Wow.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm listening.
Sorry, it's a lot of noise. And today she's a mother. She's got a little girl. Wow. And these are all funded by overseas former members and donors. Rabbi, South African Jewry, I say to you, people that are leaving this country, don't run and kick the stable door. This community was good to you. Invest in the community. And don't forget your heritage. Don't forget your descendants that you're leaving behind.
That's great advice, Rabbi Moshe Silberhaf. Thank you for bringing us the story of Zimbabwe's Jewish community to life. And as I'm listening to you, your work not only keeps memories alive, but also ensures that these narratives remain part of the greater Jewish tapestry. Thanks for joining us on The Home Run.